Welcome to the August 2011 podcast for Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics. I'm Natalie Pinchem. In this podcast, Dr. Hugh Garten of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor speaks with Dr. Mary Huang and Dr. Shenandoah Robinson of Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital, Cleveland, Ohio, about their article. The article, titled Increased Incidence of Non-Accidental Head Trauma in Infants and Association with Economic Recession, appears in this month's issue.
Hello, welcome. This is another podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. I'm Hugh Garten from the University of Michigan, and I have the pleasure of being on the line with Dr. Mary Huang and Dr. Shenandoah Robinson from Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital. And they've been kind enough to agree to discuss their article, The Increased Incidence of Non-Accidental Head Trauma in Infants Associated with Economic Recession. First, to both of you, congratulations on this excellent paper. I really enjoyed reading it. And here in Michigan, we've certainly seen our fair share of this sort of problem, as I think most children's hospitals do. I think as we get started, I'd like to give the listeners just a chance to understand the overall view of the paper. So from my perspective, I could summarize the paper by saying that you studied the relationship of children who presented to your institution between the rates of non-accidental trauma versus all trauma, that is, all children who presented to your institution with trauma, for children who were less than 2 years of age in two periods, from both 2001 to 2007, when the national economic activity was either growing or static, and in the second period, roughly from very late 2007 into 2010, when the national economy was in recession. And I think I'd like to start by just asking you just very briefly to summarize your study results so that as people are listening, they can have a sense for where our conversation might be going.
So in summary, Dr. Garten, you did a really good job at explaining how the study was set up. But our main results is that in the context of an overall decrease in all traumas and actually decrease in all accidental head traumas, we saw a doubling of the incidence rates in non-accidental head traumas in this infant population from 0 to 2. And this is compared to the rates in the non-recession period to the rates in the recession period.
Okay. So just to highlight it by repeating it, the rate of non-accidental head trauma in patients 0 to 2 years of age in comparison to the rates of all head trauma doubled in the recessionary period as opposed to the non-recessionary period.
Yes.
All right, very good. So let me first ask, how did you get interested in this question, and maybe what was your hypothesis as you started investigating the databases that I know you looked through to create your data set?
I was a medical student at Case Western Reserve University doing a rotation with a neurosurgery department, and Dr. Robinson was my attending, and we were going through rounds, and there were a couple of patients on our service who had non-accidental head trauma. So just in a discussion with her and a few other caretakers and physicians at the time, they were saying, well, it just seems like there's been an increase in non-accidental head traumas over the last couple of years. Could it have anything to do with the recession? And so I, as a medical student, thought, oh, well, that's a really interesting question. And I have a little bit of background in public health and epidemiology. So I thought, oh, maybe as a med student, I'll look into this. And so that's when we looked at the trauma database registry. And then I talked to my brother, actually, who is an economist, and he gave me some ideas as well, and then we put this paper together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think your study methodology was to go to your trauma database and identify from that all individuals who in the database were listed as being victims of non-accidental trauma. And perhaps you could comment on how that diagnosis is being made in patients in your institution.
It's a protocol that's been in place for the last decade, and it involves an interdisciplinary group of pediatric neurosurgeons, pediatricians who specialize in child abuse, social workers, and the ICU pediatricians, ER physicians, and they're all involved in making this diagnosis.
So you get together as a group on a periodic basis and evaluate all these individuals.
Usually our child protection physician, Dr. McDavid, goes and works through all of the group to solicit everyone's opinion, and we come to a consensus through that, but we don't actually sit together in one room.
And relative to the study results, you know, have all these people been involved over both time periods from 2001 to 2007 and then from early or very late 2007 to 2010? Has that been consistent over that time period?
Yeah, and that's one way, or one reason we were able to do this is we've had the same group of neurosurgeons, neurologists, and child protection physicians, and very significant consistency among the pediatric trauma surgeons and the ICU team. So there was very little variability over that time period. And we also had very little variability in terms of how trauma is evaluated in Northern Ohio. We're the only level one American College of Surgeons certified trauma center. A few cases go to the other children's hospitals in the area, but that distribution has remained stable over time.
So you almost answer my next question, which is, given that you're really studying at a single institution, how do you address these issues of a referral bias that could come up in a paper like this? I know that you looked at the sort of characteristics of the children, demographics, et cetera, between, you know, when they presented in the early non-recessionary period and the late recessionary period. Were there any differences in either where the kids came from or gender or any other metrics that you had on the children themselves between the two periods that would make you think you're looking at a different group of kids for some reason?
Yeah, when we looked at that, the demographic data, we didn't see any differences in age, gender, in the area that they were living at the time, the county that they were living. And because we were limited by just looking at the pediatric database, this was just the information that we had. And it's also important to note that these are demographic variables of the infant victims, and not of the perpetrators.
Right, right. But again, similarly sort of focused on this issue of, you know, the potential for, I guess, what we'd have to call referral bias. It sounds like there have been no major changes in the healthcare environment in Cleveland, at least the pediatric healthcare environment. No major new institutions opening that would siphon patients or closing that would increase your patient referral load during the two time periods. Is that also reasonably fair to say?
Yeah, it's been very stable in terms of the number of institutions. Ohio is blessed with 8 children's hospitals, and there's been fairly stable patterns over time. There's also, similar to elsewhere in the country, because of the litigation issues, children with severe injuries or neurological issues are only cared for in children's hospitals. And so we know that these kids are not cared for out in the community.
Right, right. So to the extent possible, you feel The nature of the people coming to you looks pretty similar, and probably the opportunity for them to come to you as opposed to some other institution probably pretty similar in the two time periods, right? So the second thing that you did was compare the injury incidence to particular markers for economic activity. What did you use for economic activity?
For economic activity, what we did was we looked at the Bureau of Economic Research. They are determined when a recession begins, when it ends. And so that's how we decided to split the data. Is they picked a date in 2001 when the recession two recessions ago ended, and then we picked a date in 2007 when this most recent recession began. And then we used those as cutoff points in evaluating our data. Then we also looked at unemployment rates, and we did an aggregate of the employment rates of the county where the infant came from. Did an aggregate summary of that and then compared those rates and just sort of showed them graphically in terms of the trend of what happened.
Right, right. So you're able to obtain essentially national data for your economic activity, and you accepted the national definition of when a recession started as opposed to an Ohio-specific definition or a Cleveland-specific definition for when the recession starts or and ends.
Yeah, we actually contacted the local Cleveland community, different offices through the government to try to get more local numbers, but because they were inconsistent or there was data kept for a certain period of time, but then they stopped keeping it, and there was no general consensus or consistent way that they collected that data, we decided not to use that. So that is one potential bias of our study as well.
Right, right. So in a broad way, we discussed very briefly sort of the overall study results. We've just been discussing sort of methodology. I'd like to turn now to the results of the methodological analysis. And we've said that the rates of non-accidental trauma increase in the recessionary periods. But if I delve in a little more detail, it looks like you're able to provide sort of your overall rates of trauma. And if I recall correctly, those drop between the two time periods. That is, if there's a reduction in your overall trauma volume and in your head injury specific trauma volume between the non-recessionary period and the recessionary period. Is that correct?
I think in general that reflects overall national trends or what people have been seeing in the trauma community. And we don't know exactly why, but potentially it could be for wearing helmets or that there's just more laws with child safety, perhaps with car seat enforcement, so that type of thing.
Yeah, and I know we certainly here, we're not all that far away from you here in Michigan, or I'm not all that far away from you here in Michigan, and certainly we've also seen a trend towards a reduction in head injury, in particular in severe head injury, which is gratifying, obviously. Here in Michigan, we have attributed some of this to a reduction in the total number of miles driven. Our institution sees a lot of vehicular trauma. The recession certainly caused a major drop in the number of miles driven, and so our conclusion was that fewer miles driven means fewer, you know, individuals exposed to the potential for head injury. So we certainly think there likely is a correlation with economic activity in that sense. We've been speaking about the overall rate of trauma, whereas specific to the non-accidental head trauma rate, you observed a significant increase in that. And to quote directly from the paper, during the recession, there was at least one non-accidental trauma patient in 68% of the months while the country was in recession versus only 44% of the months where there at least one non-accidental trauma patient when the country was not in recession. So that's a pretty big jump. That's almost a 60% increase in the overall rate where these events are occurring, or at least on a monthly basis. I think you also saw a difference in the severity of the injuries as well. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, based on the GCS scores on admission, we also saw an increase in the severity as well.
And that's not entirely obvious to me why there would be an increase in the severity of the injury. I know your data doesn't really allow you to draw any specific conclusions as to why this would be the case, but from just being familiar with the patients themselves and with the concepts, what sort of secondary hypotheses might you be thinking about as to why it would be true that individuals were more severely injured in the recessionary period than in the non-recessionary period?
One of the first things that comes to mind is just that perhaps the level of stress that the perpetrators had due to the economy, perhaps they don't have a job, perhaps they were losing their home, and they just didn't have enough resources. Perhaps that decreased their threshold for violence and that they just inflicted more severe injuries. We also thought that potentially they could have less access to healthcare resources. So maybe the injury that was inflicted wasn't as bad, but because they didn't have insurance, they held off on seeing a provider. And so by the time they got to the ER, their injuries were a lot worse. And then also that all the preventative checks perhaps were all in place. Some of the resources were cut in Ohio, like regular county checks, child protection services, perhaps the checks that they do regularly on these families, they were not done, or some of these families got cut from programs and an injury happened.
Right. So then these are all, again, relative to the paper. We have to call those speculations, but certainly you live in this area. Dr. Robinson, you were commenting to me previously, there was a cut or a defined reduction in social services available during this time period. Is that correct?
Yes, there's a statewide reduction in a lot of the social services. And so because we don't know who the perpetrator was in a lot of the cases, we weren't able to then go back and track and substantiate that speculation. Mm-hmm. So that would be a very hard study to do. But we do know that a lot of our social services were cut for various things, for support for single parents, for county follow-up, for things like foster care and adoption.
Right, right, right. And what did you find with respect to the unemployment data as opposed to the economic or recessionary data?
Well, what we found was that we looked at the local trends for unemployment rates, and we found that the unemployment rates actually went up just a little bit before the non-accidental head trauma rates went up. And this was just a observation that we did. We didn't perform a statistical analysis on this because We didn't feel like the data was appropriately matched just because we were looking at the county from where these infants were coming from, and we didn't know if these actually reflected the unemployment rates of the perpetrators or not. So the question is, what did unemployment happen before non-accidental head traumas occurred? Like, were the perpetrators unemployed, then they had more stress, and then they had more time at home, and then these non-accidental head traumas happened, or was it not related, or was there something else going on? But we just wanted to look at the trend.
Right. But if the data presented largely graphically for this particular question are correct, it would imply that the unemployment rate is up after the head trauma rate jumps, or the non-accidental head trauma rate jumps. That is, waiting for the unemployment rate to jump is, in some ways, that's a too late sign, at least in your analysis. The unemployment rate change is occurring actually after the relative jump in head injury rates, or non-accidental head injury rates.
And in the economic world, they usually consider employment rates as being a lagging indicator of the economy, so it's pretty consistent with what the experts in that field are saying. So the question is, where exactly, and we talked about this earlier, the cutoff point that we used for our study is actually based on a national cutoff point, and so it's hard to interpret for our local data exactly when the recession happened. But let's say the recession did actually happen in Cleveland at the same time that it happened nationally, then you can say that perhaps non-accidental head trauma is a co-indicator or could be leading indicator of the economic recession, and that employment rates, just like the employment rates, are a lagging indicator. Or we can move the line of where the recession happened, then perhaps if it happened a little bit earlier or later, then it would give us a little bit of a different conclusion of where non-accidental head traumas happened.
And if you could study other economic metrics or other numbers, let's suppose in another situation that you could do the whole thing again, other particular metrics that you think would be valuable to investigate. So your study, of course, looks at, you know, the economic activity rate and looks at the unemployment rate. You know, we're inundated almost daily with consumer price index activities at the wholesale or consumer level. So there's a lot of numbers out there that economists have their fingertips on. You know, in your study of this area, are there any other ones where, if they were available to, you know, a group in particular, you think that would be a valuable area to investigate now that you've done this study?
I think it would be really interesting to look at housing and access to insurance. And I think these do exist. The databases that I was accessing were pretty extensive. I think what we were limited on is the data that we had and how we can make that connection from our data to their data, just because we weren't looking at, you know, if we had the perpetrator data, I think that would be a lot more interesting, and if we actually knew what their unemployment rates were, what their housing situation was, or what their insurance access were, I think that would have been more interesting.
Right, right. What do you think? I mean, you sort of highlighted this in some ways in the conversation already, but if you had to put a point on it, what would you say are the overall implications of your study for either state and local social services for these children? Most of us think of this as a preventable source of serious head injury.
I think most importantly is just to raise awareness that this is actually happening. I think the people that are on the ground actually working with these infants probably already know that, but perhaps the people who are making the policy decisions and maybe the families who are, or the extended families that are involved with these families who there is a non-accidental head trauma, perhaps they can be more aware of the issue and understand the stresses associated with child rearing. I think also as clinicians, it can raise our index of suspicion when we're, you know, going down to the ED and trying to make a diagnosis, just knowing that this is pretty common these days.
What do you think are the overall implications of your study for state and local social services providers? And you were sort of highlighting that you thought two things. First of all, it would help policymakers be aware that there may be a significant, non-trivial increase in the incidence of non-accidental head trauma during phases of economic downturn, and that perhaps this might enable alternative policy decisions about where to put resources under times of stress, which is always a challenging choice for people in policy-making positions. You also indicated, I think, that you thought that those of us providing care maybe ought to have a sense that there's an increased incidence of this problem, and that so we're more likely to see it as we evaluate individuals during that time. And I just was going back to try to think about highlighting that. And relative to all trauma during the non-recessionary period, the incidence of head trauma, I think it's per month, was about, and this is in less than two-year-olds, went from about 2.7 head injuries per month in, again, in the 0 to 2 age group to 3.3 during the recessionary period, so perhaps a non-statistically significant change. The rate of accidental head trauma per month went from about 2 per month to 1.9 per month, so a non-significant change, whereas the incidence of non-accidental trauma went from 0.7 per month to 1.4 per month. So at least in your institution, in children between 0 and 2 years of age, when you went down to evaluate a head trauma, there was almost a 60-40 that was accidental versus non-accidental, at least it looks like to me. That is certainly a big jump in the likelihood that you'd see non-accidental trauma. So your point that it's an important point for us to remember as care providers that in the times of economic downturn, there might be a significant jump in how common the problem was, I think is very well taken. Let me close by just congratulating you again on an excellent paper, which I think really raises awareness for us all in terms of how common this problem is. And I think it'll be very interesting to see how this kind of analysis develops. I'm personally very interested to see the relationship between this particular problem and other economic markers that maybe help us to understand a little more finely what's going on in the individual level. And I agree with you, you know, having a data set where one could ask or what's going on to the perpetrators themselves might enable us to direct interventions at that level more successfully. But I think as a starting point for discussion, you've really provided us with an excellent avenue and an excellent paper that I think administrators and people in policymaking places will find very helpful.
Well, thanks a lot. I think you really hit it on the head in terms of raising the awareness. You and I both know from taking care of these kids for a long time, and we take care of these kids throughout their childhood, that a lot of these kids are left devastated. And so despite all the pain and everything for the families, there's also a tremendous economic burden to society for these kids that they need all this lifelong extra care. So they hopefully help our policymakers make a more informed decision about where they distribute the money.
Well, and again, it's outside the scope of this paper, but you know, the relative savings of preventing these injuries is enormous. As you've just pointed out, the lifelong costs are substantial. So I certainly concur with your thoughts.
I think it's also important to note that I don't think policy or access to healthcare, even though it's very important, that there are interventions perhaps beyond maybe some more creative interventions that we haven't yet discovered or thought about that could also be addressed. In looking into this issue a little bit more, there are some studies done in Europe that found that, you know, even access to healthcare, when equalizing, that really did not change the rates of non-accidental head trauma. And that's a smaller study that was done elsewhere, but that it is important to address the policy issues and to address awareness, but that there is potentially other things that are going on as well that may be contributing to this trend that we noticed.
Yes, certainly. Well, I think that's wonderful of both of you to give us so much time on this excellent paper. And I'll thank you both again for all the effort that you and your co-authors put into producing the results and also in spending your time discussing it with me.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This concludes our podcast for the August issue of Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the newly launched American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.